another edition of the Streaking the Lawn podcast. Once again, my name is Pearson. Once again, I'm joined by Caroline. How's it going?
Hey.
Hey. And you'll have to pardon Caroline's ocean noise sounds yeah. Coming through. You're in the car.
I am. I am currently en route to Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm in North Kakalaki. I am heading to ACC's Operation Basketball, which always sounds way more intense than it is, but the ACC Basketball Media Day. So I'm very excited. It should be awesome. My first time going, and we'll have tons of awesome content out of it. So You'll have to excuse the noise. However, Mom, I am hands-free, so everything's safe.
That's good. As a friend of mine said today, Operation Basketball sounds something like an old person thinks a young person would coolly describe it as.
Yeah. Hey, guys, I don't know. What about, like,
Operation Basketball?
And then the entire room's like, great idea, Jim. That's what the kids are doing these days.
Yeah. But we need to make sure that we got on the podcasting because we have a lot to talk about for sure. Yeah. The Hoos have played a couple games since last we chatted. They won in Chapel Hill, which was amazing and awesome and hard fought for sure. And then they got blown out on homecoming day at home.
They got shellacked.
Against Boston College. So a couple weeks, obviously two very different results. Rather than going game by game, I mean, I think there's things you can really take from the two of them together. Say that this season's obviously still a step up and showing some encouraging signs, but you're going to have hiccup games here and there.
For sure.
And certainly we don't need to be talking about winning the Coastal or anything like that.
Which still not dead.
I don't think we were really ever doing seriously. But after winning Carolina, you know, you're going, all right, they're 5-1. The tougher games are still in November. We knew that the whole time.
Yep.
And BC, I think, dampers a little bit of the optimism, a little bit. And it wasn't just a loss. I mean, anyone listening to this probably watched it, but they just looked bad across the board, got outplayed in really every facet of the game except maybe punting.
Super good.
Yeah, and there were,
you know, Coleman was fantastic.
A lot of that's got to go on the coaches. You know, they didn't look prepared. The whatever they were trying wasn't working. Abandoning the run game seemed to be a theme with earlier worse games in the season, and something they, you know, you're down a quick couple scores. I get the reasoning behind it, but Jordan Ellis needs to touch the ball more, no matter what the score is. Particularly against Boston College, because they're not statistically any good at stopping the run. But, you know, what were your biggest takeaways from the pair of games?
So the UNC game was great in that, one, it was a win, yay. But two, the way that they won, like you mentioned, like they've won in a variety of different ways this season, which is awesome to see, because there's been blowout wins like Boise State. There's been a comeback, you know, they've come back a couple times, Duke and UNC, and this, they really made a defensive stand, similar to the Duke game, where it shows the defense can do these things. My biggest concern regarding this pass game is solely the fact that it showed again that the defense is susceptible to these big yardage plays.
Sure.
And the players saw, and so there were two big runs by the kid, the really athletic kid for UNC, and then there were two huge plays, two 76-yard runs, which is brutal. That one drive that bought for the first touchdown on, we were this close to a safety.
Yep.
And to have that drive then continue. And so it was interesting because I talked to Coach Mendenhall and a couple of the players. So Chris Peace and Devontae Cross and Andre Lavroni were available yesterday at Football Media Day. And I know there's been a lot of criticism of the play calling. Andre Lavroni had an interesting statement where he was basically like, this is all on the players because we didn't execute the right, like, he's like, the coaches were making good play calls.
Yeah.
We didn't execute the plays. So if I'm dropping a pass when I'm open and Kirk hits me in the hands, like, you can't really knock that play call because it should have been successful. And so I can see both sides. I can see, you know, maybe they try and do – Boston College's air defense, pass defense, I guess it would be the accurate term, hadn't really been tested much because people had just been jamming it down the throat with the run game. Now, I don't know why necessarily why we wouldn't be like, hey, that's worked. Let's try that and do the same thing. But, you know, Kurt has been successful, so it is what it is. I mean, I think it's fair to say, like, they just got stomped. Like, yeah. They just got outplayed. And I think Bronco made a really interesting point in the press conference this week saying, in hindsight, you know, it's always 2020, he said maybe there was a little bit more whispering about win number six than he had thought. And I cannot fault for a second those players starting to get a little bit excited about the fact that a previously or a perennially struggling BC team was coming to town. Sure. I just think maybe the guys got a little bit big for their britches. I'm not mad about it. I don't hate it. I don't hold it against them. They're 19 to 22-year-olds who are on the brink of accomplishing something that this team – that they've never had happen in their college career.
Right.
Did they get a little distracted?
Right.
Perhaps. Am I going to get mad at it? Right.
No.
I think that this team definitely has what it takes to win one more game throughout the rest of this year. There's still, you know, whatever it is, five more chances, which – I don't know. It's scary. Yeah. It is scary to have the 5-1 precipice and the fear that it might not happen.
It would be a monumental letdown combined with a 5-win total that most people would have accepted.
Absolutely. You know, and that's what sucks. Like, it would really suck not to make a bowl game right now. But at the same time, like, winning 5 games and, like, some of the games that they played, like, they did really well. So it's and that's what I think Bronco is kind of like. He said again, he's like, I think people are getting way ahead of themselves. Like, he's still very down to earth on where they're at. He's like, this is foundation thing. This is building. We have not built. And I think the other thing that people talked about and gave a lot of headache and questions over is the decision to play Lindell Stone, which after listening to a few things and looking at stuff, like, I have no question, I have no issues with anymore. Because I think that they're looking at this season.
Right.
In the long run of this season, and they weren't built for depth at the quarterback position. That's something they have to address anyway. And whether or not, like, Lindell plays 3 years or four, like, they need to still have someone available to play that fourth year.
It was at the time very concerning because looked like, you know, Benkert's got to come out because of his helmet coming off. Let's put in the backup, and he's the backup. And if that were the only reason why, then it would have, you know, infuriated everybody. And so at the time, that was my initial reaction.
Yeah,
was that Stone needs to be playing the fourth quarter if that's the case, and he did. So it made a lot more sense after looking at the bigger picture of that game. But the thing I struggle with is if you're going to play Stone then. And you had that in mind at any point in time, you know, if it was going to be a blowout or if it was a loss that at least there was no chance of coming back in and Kurt's getting his ass kicked, we're going to play Stone. Then why not play him against William & Mary a little bit or Boise in a blowout a little bit too?
And I think a lot of that was more like, Kurt has taken an increasing brunt hits over the few weeks. I think they were hoping to have reduced that amount of – he took a beating – not a beating, but I just feel like he's got a little bit more contact stuff with the last couple games. So I think it's an evolving decision-making process. Like,
sure. But you would have to anticipate that Benkert was going to get it.
Was going to be playing both sides of the ball.
Right.
So normally I think that's a situation. So against Boise State, Devontae Cross did come in and play some quarterback.
Right.
So I think he was initially the guy that if there was a backup situation, like a blowout or an injury, but with the injuries on the, in the secondary.
In the secondary, right.
They lost because they didn't, that kid, by the way, he's an interesting kid. What a team player. And I know that's like such a cheesy thing to say.
Sure.
Like, he's literally doing everything they need. He splits his practice. He was telling us, he was like, it's 50-50 offense, defense. Then on offense, it's probably about 40% wide receiver, 10% quarterback. And then the reporter's like, but don't you also play special teams? And he was like, oh, yeah, I do. So he obviously has to practice that as well. And so the guy was like, so you literally give 110% every day. He's like, yeah, I guess so. But it is, and he's done relatively well for a guy that's been asked to come in and just kind of, you know, do whatever on the defense.
Well, he looked good in the one Wildcat play. It's not really Wildcat if it's just because it's a running QB back there. I assume he knows how to throw a football. We do, you know.
I would guess so, since he played it. I would hope so, since he played in high school.
Yeah, I don't know. It can't be overstated how critical making a bowl game would be for this team. Mainly because of just getting over that hump. I think, you know, the extra practice, the exceeding expectations that most of the fan base probably had, and maybe even the coaching staff had, and certainly the media had. You know, there are 5 games left. You think at Pitt is the most doable based on their performance so far. Louisville looks beatable. Georgia Tech's at home and is, you know, they don't look like the best team in the country or anything like that. Right. The Hokies look damn strong, but, you know, rivalry games, who knows, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it's all things that we shouldn't give up on them getting a win or two here.
Yeah.
But they all could be losses very easily, too.
It would have been nice, you know what I mean, to just get that out of the way. And I think one of the things that they talked about, too, is just like, now, so after the loss, Coach Mendenhall said, like, before he could even get into the locker room to address the team, like, so when he walked into the locker room, I guess is the best way to put it, Quinn Blanding had already circled everybody up and was talking to him and was like, you know, and they said the gist of it was pretty much like, we just got served some humility. Like, we need to realize that we have to focus on each week, and anything that is pulling our focus other than Pitt, we will lose this game.
Yeah.
And Mendenhall said he didn't have to address anything else with the team because Quinn said everything that he had wanted to say and said it in a way that was that got through to the guys, and it seems very, and part of me is like, sometimes it just, if you get smacked in the face like that, you're like, shit, yeah, wake up. Like, if they had lost on like a field goal, like, do they get the same message type thing? You know what I mean? Do they change or look at themselves the same way and make any adjustments that they would need to? And part of it's just like, sometimes in sports or in life, kids, listen up, pull up a chair. Sometimes shit just doesn't go your way. Like, there were a couple, and obviously 41-10 is like a blowout, but like, there were a couple like badly missed calls that were like pivotal at the time. Like, and I'm not saying that would have changed the complete thing, but like, when shit's not going your way, sometimes it just doesn't go your way.
Yeah.
And like that flea flicker pass they had, like just passed, it was a great pass. It just barely got in there. And like,
Quinn just missed it.
Yeah.
You know, like he should have picked it.
Yeah. Everything was just coming up. I mean, when they did look like they picked the ball,
right,
it barely touched the ground. Yeah. And it's just like, everything was coming up Boston College. And
right,
to give them credit, I think they're a better team than, and maybe everyone who loses says that, but they went to Louisville and smacked them around until Louisville put together like a little drive at the end, or like a, you know, a little mini comeback. But
right,
I think they might end up being, they've got some talented players, and I think that they might end up being, it's not as horribly embarrassing as some people would make it out to be, I think. I mean, obviously the fashion in which it happened, but it's, yeah. For me, that one's like, it's done. I don't think any less of this team. I'm not embarrassed by this team, as I saw some people on Twitter say. Like, it'll be fine. Like, they're college kids. They missed a couple tackles, and it ended up with a bad score. So, whatever. I'm over it.
Well, that's good. As long as you're beyond it.
Yeah, as long as I'm beyond it. Everyone else move on.
I think the premise is that they are a well-coached team, we're not going to see a repeat on the road this weekend.
And an interesting point that was brought up in the press conference was, in some sense, this might have been a really big benefit because Pitt runs a similar style. So they've now had an opportunity to see that style and have their flaws pointed out against that style. So maybe they can fix some of the things that they had issues with before heading to Pitt. So,
yeah, Pitt hasn't had a very good defensive year. They're giving up 29.6 points a game. And 434 yards a game. That's a lot. Ooh. So
they lost their quarterback, so they're playing a different guy at QB. And then their running backs are going to be a big issue because they've got like that Quadri Henderson or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, he was great against the Hoos last year.
Yeah, he's tough to handle. But then also I've read that their pass rush isn't great, which makes me a little bit more comfortable because that's one of the things that BC was very good at.
Gotcha.
Was making life miserable for Kurt all freaking day. So
that's true.
If the if our sister site over at Cardiac Hill is to be trusted, which, you know, SB Nation, shout out. They said that their guys have been giving opponents quarterbacks all day, which I would love.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk a little bit about the basketball. They had a blue and white scrimmage. It was on Watch ESPN.
It was.
Which was pretty exciting. Kyle Guy, he shoot ball good.
Yeah.
Was my biggest analysis takeaway.
That was
from it.
Primary takeaway.
It's funny that you can, like, you know, watch them play each other. And I don't know. To me, it's just sort of fun to watch them be playing. You know, like there isn't really anything to take away. I guess you could say, well, like, yeah, his Kyle's shot looks pretty still. So whatever. It's fun. I'm glad they do it. The team seems to have a good time. I don't think there's really anything you can really read from it.
There are a few. I mean, I completely agree. Like, it's tough. Like, how do you read a situation in which there was a joke from our buddy Ben Swain on Twitter that was like, he was talking about the Duke one. He's like, oh, they gave up as many points as they scored. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you're looking at your team play your team. So either your team's doing something well on offense or someone's messing something up on defense. Like, how do you look at what it is? However, Kyle Guy looked like a different dude out there, a different guy. In this way. Obviously, he can shoot the ball well. We knew that. He shot almost 50% last year from three.
Yeah.
He was more aggressive. His shot looked as smooth as ever. Like, that wasn't – he always has a quick release. He scored in a variety of ways, which I thought was very important. And he was much more he looked, one, more comfortable. Obviously, again, playing people he knows, so maybe it's not that much to read into it. But he was able to create different ways to score. So he took it in the lane. He had a breakaway dunk. He – obviously made three-pointers, but he made three-pointers with a hand in his face. He made three-pointers on a steal that became, you know, like a quick fast-break turnaround the other way where he posted up on the outside. And I think Isaiah Wilkins found him for a wide-open three. He also took in the lane and stopped on a dime and turned back and, like, had a nifty move there. But he added a floater to his
repertoire. Sure.
I saw a few people. So I don't know if I don't know if Ty has been teaching him that, because Ty used a lot of that last year.
Well, he's got to be able to score in the lane for sure. You know, and that's the biggest way for tiny little dudes to do it.
Also true.
For sure. So, you know,
the guy's been going against the trees that are, Diakite and Huff.
Yeah.
All season or all, you know, fall or whatever.
Yeah. I think a lot's going to depend on Nigel and his ability, not only to score, which you saw that he's quick and he'll get into the lane and, you know, transition finishing. He seems great at, which is always a relief.
Yeah.
But his ability to guard the other team's dynamic guys, you're really going to take some of the pressure off Hall. Because I think Hall can do a lot of that, and I don't think Ty and Kyle are going to be great at that. And they could totally prove me wrong. Obviously, they're under one of the better defensive coaches in the country. I'm sure they're going to be better at it. But I think Nigel is going to be pretty critical for them in the backcourt, which we all anticipated.
And it showed that Tony was clearly ready and willing to let him – run. Like, he let him take the ball quickly, and it wasn't just him going coast to coast. Like, they did push it sometimes, so that's something that I think a lot of people want to see more of. I did already feel a little bit more comfortable with Nigel's ball handling than Shayok on those fast breaks. Sorry, Shayok, I miss you. I do, but you're dribbling made me so anxious all the time. He started a little slow. I was a little concerned in the first quarter with Nigel. And then by the second, he barely missed from then on out. And he took good shots. He made nice moves to the middle. He was relatively, there were a couple times on defense where, you know, the coaches were pointing stuff out to him or whatever, but that's to be expected. And so it's cool. I'm excited to see what he can do. I mean, I'm curious what the starting lineup's going to look like, because Ty was out. So it was, you know, Kyle, Jack, Isaiah, Devin. I think that's everyone I meant to say. And Nigel, who started. And I would think Ty would start in place of Nigel, but I don't know. Because then you're like, okay, maybe Nigel comes in for Kyle. And
yeah.
But then yeah. Kyle scores so many, like, after all those, he scored 25 points in, like.
Yeah, and you never know with what the starting lineup is really ever indicative of, you know, right. minutes or anything like that. That's absolutely. Why, you know, Jack Salt starts, and he's not going to, whatever, come at me.
I love Jack Salt.
Jack Salt should not be playing the most minutes of the front court players on this team.
Well, no, Isaiah is going to be.
And Diakite should have more minutes than Salt, for sure.
I don't
or
know.
Or things are not going as well as they could be.
I don't know about that.
Like, it would be a clear indication that Diakite isn't where he should be.
I think Salt gets a extraordinarily bad rap on offense that isn't as deserved as people might think. Nobody can get people as open as Jack Salt does. He is
he's good screening. Yeah, I thought you meant like his ability to score.
Well, that's basically an assist. You can't score if you aren't open, and PJ's not setting those blocks.
I'm not saying he's not viable or not, you know, like I know why he's being played. I have also weighed the pros and cons in my mind.
So here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
Like, everyone would have said the same type of thing about second-year Akil or second-year Jerome Mainsay or second-year Darion. None of those guys were particularly lighting it up on the offensive end, but turned into...
But I remember second-year all those guys, and I don't remember saying that about... Well, Mainsay, I mean, that came out of nowhere. But Atkins and Akil are different type of players.
Right.
You know, they're...
Somewhat.
Bouncy power forwards who, you know, had to grow into their height and grow into a role of you know, playing with a little more strength and whatnot.
Right.
Jack Salt's already been big and strong. He doesn't have, you know, the touch that those guys have.
Yet. Anyway, I will stand for Jack Salt any day of the week. I think he's going to be very important to this team. But I'm not saying that Huff and Diakite are not. Huff and Diakite might not be as big of an interior scoring help as we might think. So I don't want people to think that because, I don't know, there wasn't a lot of it on Sunday. Some of that might be just because they know who they're playing against or whatever. They didn't decide to run that. I don't know. There wasn't. Mm-hmm. That's my biggest question. Still my biggest concern, if you will, is that's a huge piece because while there are outstanding shooters again on this team, including Jay Huff, like that 3-point shot is gorgeous. Diakite made one. Like, I'm all for that. Take the open shots. We cannot just fall in love with jumpers because it's going to end up again where you hit a slump. You can't rely on those points. And then you're scoring 39 points in the NCAA tournament. I mean, overly dramatic about it, but, but I do think that those guys, I'm very excited about Jay Huff. Diakite had a couple nice like baseline jumpers, which again make me stressed. But a lot of the Jack Salt and Isaiah not taking it into the post might have been the fact that, again, the two springiest dudes in the history of the universe were the guys playing the post against them. So I don't know. I just want to see more post play. Even if it's just throwing it in, threatening to do it, because then you at least make them respect that. It's just like they're establishing a run game, so they have to respect it so you can open up the passing game. It's the same idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really like this team. I think that this team will actually finish better than last year's team.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the defense is going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
There are still some pieces that need to get worked out just from young guys picking up stuff. But when you have two guys that are like the last line of defense, like Jay and Diakite, Diakite swatted one to like the third row. Like, it was insane. I think so. KenPom has some preseason number one in defensive efficiency. So obviously,
yeah,
they like us a lot. But
yeah, KenPom's always going to be pretty favorable for the Hoos. I mean, the predictions
I'll take this season
are yeah, only losing four regular season games, which I'm pretty sure we would all take
by a total of 9 points.
Right. And you know, I love the KenPom. I love the idea of relying on efficiency more than just scoring averages and things like that. You can get away from some realism when you focus wholly on KenPom, as we've seen with Virginia basketball ever since they've started to be really good. You know, they're really good statistically and really good very often at winning a game. But they, you know, the end result success hasn't been top level, you know, top, like to the level that you would think a top 10 in this type of ranking is every year. Well, they haven't been a top 10 in results yet. I guess an Elite Eight counts as finishing in the top 10. But anyway, you know, there's a bit of a grain of salt to be taken with the efficiency, higher advanced stats, but that doesn't mean we don't love them for sure.
That's true. It'll be interesting. Like, the only other person, two people I want to talk about too. I saw some people being a little rough on DeAndre Hunter in the comments on a couple of the, you know, posts.
About what?
That he was underwhelming and didn't perform as much as this person thought that they would. And that's to each their own. That's fine. I don't know what you expected the kid to do in his first scrimmage against his own team.
It's, you know, they would just be running layup drills and it would have been the same thing. You know, like, I don't, so, you know.
He had a couple good plays. There were a couple moments he looked a little lost on defense. Again, to be expected. Not lost on defense, that's even a little strong. But yeah, I do not have concerns about what DeAndre Hunter is going to be. He's most likely going to play a lot of four when we play a small guard lineup, which actually I think would be a really fun lineup if you have like Kyle, Ty, Devin, Nigel. Well, that's maybe a little too small. Take one of those guys out. Take one of those guys out. Put in like Wilkins or Diakite with Hunter.
Maybe if they're playing Villanova.
It could really cause some problems.
Right.
And then I actually, a guy that's going to get some burner minutes, or not even burner minutes, but could provide some pretty good here or there help out minutes. Marco Anthony is physically ready to play. Like, he's a big kid.
Yeah.
And I thought he looked very strong. Not strong just physically, but I thought he played really well. He was someone who stood out to me that I kind of kept an eye on and wasn't really expecting like a ton as the one lone freshman, but I thought he was very good in what I was looking for from him. So I think that's someone that could definitely come in end of the half type situation or spell Devin Hall or Ty in a situation where they need someone, maybe not be the primary ball handler, but he's a big kid. Where Kyle came in, you're like, this guy looks like he's in high school. Marco came in, you're like, this kid looks like he's a college basketball player.
Oh, sure.
No offense, Kyle, if you're listening. I love you.
Awesome. No, he looks the part. I'm sure he'll get some playing time. You know, I think Tony does that a lot of times, the sort of spark, switch it up, even in hugely important games. I know he seems to be the coach that likes to talk about tightening the rotation, and then other than maybe those like guys who have had falling outs because of defense or disgruntledness or things like that, Tony seems to still play everybody who isn't redshirting and is a viable option to contribute depending on the game. You know, Thompson and Shayok leaving because of playing time, maybe there was some writing on the wall that was going to change. But everybody seemed to play a handful last season. Maybe that's why they didn't perform in the end run as well as we would have liked.
I don't know. I think everyone who comes off that bench, I feel pretty okay about.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing to have. It's just, it is going to be a question of, like, where are we finding minutes for some of these guys, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I definitely don't envy them that. Because you look, and again, when you look at it, like, can you imagine if, obviously, we wouldn't have a couple of the, like, probably wouldn't have Nigel and wouldn't have, like, probably Frankie Badocci. I just like to say that. If Mariel and Darius had stuck around.
Sure.
But can you imagine if those two guys were still, like, then you'd have a guy who wasn't even redshirting and someone who's a fourth year in,
right.
You know, 2 fourth years. So, right. I mean, I don't blame them for leaving at that point, because where are the minutes going to come from?
It would be a lot of interesting choices, because there would be no clear guy. You know, you would have hoped Mariel would have been that, but I don't think we had any guarantee of that. But no. Doesn't matter at this point. Have fun in Ames, Iowa, or wherever the hell you are. Not that I hate on the guy. I mean, do what you can. I wish the best. Yeah. But Iowa State, gosh. Ugh.
We already beat them, losers.
Yeah. All our Cyclone fan listeners are
so angry right now. If you need to email someone, email Pierce.
No, my name's Paul Wiley. Streaking
the lawn. Yep, that's
.com. We need to talk about Carla Williams.
Yes!
Our new athletic director at the university, coming from Georgia. I'm sure anybody listening to this knows of the background info, but just in case, she was sort of in that associate, assistant, a bunch of different titles.
I don't know how that all works.
Yeah, but
she's coming from the deputy athletic director position.
So, there you go. Yeah,
she was the assistant athletic director. She was an associate athletic director.
And right.
Deputy athletic director.
Right.
Those being progressing forward, I'm assuming, because I doubt that you move back and then become one higher. yeah, I went to the press conference yesterday, mm-hmm. and she is one hell of an impressive woman. I will tell you that. I'm really excited about it. It's one of those things that you kind of think about where you don't often, hopefully, fingers crossed, mm-hmm. have many of these type of press conferences. Like, you don't go through a lot of athletic directors, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those things, you get a little nervous because it's kind of a big deal. Like, they're going to be the person that's running the athletics, and that's
kind of a big deal. Yeah,
it's kind of why we do what we're doing right now. We, you know, write about the teams and mm-hmm. support them and hope that they get better. And I think that she said the right stuff. She won't start until January or February. And she will still have Craig Littlepage around at that point to answer mm-hmm. questions as he takes a role in the president's office. It'll be exciting. I think she's a great hire. She's been a player at the college level. She played basketball at Georgia. She was an assistant coach at Georgia while they had a very successful run to the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also, in that sense, she's done the recruiting piece. She knows what it's like to be a student while studying and playing. And she knows the administrative side of it. The Kevin Sauer, the rowing coach, was on the search committee, and he had said one of the things that the coaches had pointed out as something that they wanted was someone who was a coach so that they could kind of understand what they have to go through.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Recruiting and all that stuff. So that's something that was a big check mark. Really, the only check mark that she doesn't hit that people are concerned about is the fact that she's not associated with the University of Virginia.
Yeah, but, and that's can definitely be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we need to get away from some of the same names. I don't know. Yeah, I don't think that's a huge thing. Where I'd rather have someone who has, like, high academic standards and, like, I'm not saying any of the other people who are from Virginia don't have those things, but
right.
You hit the boxes that were, like, crucial to hit. And maybe it'll be big to have someone outside come in. She's already gone to Bodo, so she liked that. So that's a good start. I think she's a very cool lady. She's smart.
Good stuff.
Well-spoken. Her family's great. I talked to her daughter for a little bit. It's one of her daughters for a little bit.
Yeah. If the one complaint I can hear about her is that Georgia fans think she cared about the rules too much, that's okay with me. I'm not going to fret over that. You know, it's an interesting time at UVA because of that, you know, new presidency. The sports obviously are top tier as a whole, but football is the big concern, and she's coming from a football school.
Yeah.
You know, you hope that bodes well. So
she had a, you know,
here's hoping.
she had told or said to Bronco to give Mark Richt a call, which you'd think would be a strange request, seeing as she fired him. However, he was all about, like, he had nothing but wonderful things to say about Carla Williams. And that's an impressive thing to be able to pull off when you fire someone from a position as big as football coach, where they will still gladly sing your praises to mm-hmm. the person who will now be working for them. And then Mark Fox, their basketball coach, called Tony Bennett and was like,
Bennett. Oh, okay.
Just in case. and was like, oh, you're like, we're so sad she's leaving. Like, you're getting a good one. Like, you know, that sort of stuff. So.
All right. Well, anything we haven't discussed yet that we need to discuss? World Series?
Oh, yeah. We got either way.
Who's in the World Series? Derek Fisher.
Yeah.
And Chris Taylor. Chris Taylor's just destroying folks.
He's killing it right now. I love seeing all the great tweets. All the random tweets that are like, man, it's so hard to pitch this guy. He can't get out.
Yeah. It was him and Justin Turner, right? Were co-MVPs, yeah. I think, of the yeah. championship series. I love Justin Turner, too. I've always been a fan. Even back when he was on the O's, he wasn't that great.
I didn't know he was on the O's.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he played for the O's for a while and the Mets. And a lot of what they're talking about the Dodgers being so good is obviously they have this astronomical payroll, but it's not the reason why they're so good. So it's not their all-stars who are really leading yeah. team necessarily. By all-stars, I mean the higher paid guys.
He looks like Tormund from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, who are you rooting for between the Astros? And
I don't know. So I was obviously, as a Red Sox fan, I was rooting hardcore for the Astros. But I've really been happy with what Chris Taylor's been doing.
Yeah.
So I kind of think, I mean, not that I, you know, the Astros don't play Derek Fisher enough for me, you know?
Yeah.
But I think either way, it's always cool to see, you know, a team that hasn't won in a while win.
Right.
Even though, like, the Dodgers obviously have, like, this really long history and
stuff.
I hope they get Vin Scully back to do something.
I can't imagine I've ever rooted for an LA team in anything.
Not. No.
You know, unless it was an LA team playing a team I didn't like, which I can't think of an example of that happening.
Like, I'd root for the A's if they were playing the Yankees. You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, but that's like Bay Area. Like, I mean,
that's true. You mean like specifically straight up LA?
LA, Southern California, and whatnot.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm probably rooting for the Astros, just in case anyone cares out there. I'll usually pull for the AL.
I really like the Astros, even when they were like.
Yeah, Altuve. Who could hate him? He's great.
He's so little and cute.
Verlander's ODU Goochland guy. You know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
That's cool.
It's for ODU. I believe he's from Goochland. But anyway.
Ooh, one last shout out before we end this bad boy. Shout out to the women's field hockey team.
Word.
For winning the ACC regular season title. They crushed it. They're really freaking good. And I haven't been able to do a Monday motivation in a couple weeks.
All right.
A couple of crazy things, but good for them.
Go out and get that national championship because we need more.
Need more of them.
More and more.
Always more.
All right. Well, next week we will be back to hopefully talk about bowl eligibility and possibilities after a Pitt win. And if not, then we'll start coming up with reasons for optimism for the next games to try and get there. Basketball season not far away at all. Under 3 weeks at this point before the home opener. But certainly we'll be back to talk a little more about both of those things before that season starts. But thanks for joining me, Caroline. Drive safe.
I will. Thanks for chatting.
Very reckless of you, but I hope all the listeners appreciate it. We'll catch you next time. Go Hoos.